Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Matrix Moments. This one is really special. We have with us today Sharad and Andy, who are the founders of Nisa, which is India's first AI cloud. I said special because Sharad is one of the original internet pioneers of India. He had started Netmagic way back in the late 90s and has been in the data center game for the last 2.5 decades. Very excited to have you here and welcome Sharad. Welcome Andy.
Thank you.
I'm just going to start with one question for Avnish, right? Because your relationship goes back 25 years. We are celebrating the Silver Jubilee. Avnish, how did you and Sharad meet each other? What's the story over there?
Yeah, you know, it's first of all, thank you, Pranay. I think it's the first one we are doing together. So excited to be doing that. This is very special. Some people might know that I came back to India to start online marketplace business. Not only did I forget to check whether they were internet users or not, we also forgot to check whether the internet connections worked and all of that stuff. The site, you know, we managed to get it going. We used to be hosted in Prabhadevi at what used to be called VSNL, which people would not have heard of. It was the government's data center. And I don't want to say too much, but net, sometimes the air conditioning wouldn't work, the wires were hanging, rats were running. It was a different type of data center and it was a nightmare. And we had raised venture capital. We used to advertise, and the minute we would advertise, the site would go down. I was the acting CTO. I would end up sleeping in the data center. And one day I got a call. I don't know who was the common connect, but I got a call and it was Sharad. And he said, I'm so-and-so. I have this private data center, but it wasn't even a cell. He basically said, I understand you are having trouble. Let me know how I can help. And then I requested him and he came and looked. And for the longest time, our system was architected in a way where you couldn't even move it out. It was like you had put a rock in VSNL and you can't move it out. No business happening between us other than just pure goodwill. I would say Bazi, the company would not have existed without Sharad. I had one technical person within, and midnight, anytime we would go to VSNL, they are more technical. And I think at some point Andy got involved and we would just try to just patch it together. And there was no actual commercial arrangement. So thank you. That basically kept Bazi alive. And then of course, at some point he set up a very fancy, well, there was a fancy data center and we moved. And I'm told I was the first cage client. I felt like a caged client, but that worked out well. So thank you. Wonderful to actually be back in business after 25 years of an association. Very excited.
Thank you, Avnish.
Thank you.
Maybe Sharad and Andy, question for you from the early days, right? So I think back then, like Avnish included, everyone was trying to get consumers onto the internet. You took a different route to enable businesses to get on the internet. What was the thought process back then?
So that was, you know, when I started Netmagic, before I raised venture capital, and, you know, data centers, as you know, is a very capital intensive business.
Yeah.
We were doing consulting for a lot of the ISPs, the early ISPs, and the valuation were based on number of eyeballs or number of consumers, as you said. So everybody was focused on that because they wanted to increase their valuation. But I was exposed from my days in the US for how businesses were leveraging the internet. And we found that to be a gap. When we were consulting to all these players, early movers in the ISP space, we found nobody's really targeting the business users. And that's how we wrote the business plan. So just addressing a gap that existed. And we were fortunate that the co-founder of Exodus Communications, BV Jagdish, decided to angel invest in us. And that's how we saw some of the state-of-the-art data centers that they had built at that time, and you know, that's how we got into the data center business.
And of course, after that, it was massive exit to NTT after multiple rounds of venture funding, and then you continue to scale the business over there, right? When you think about your second innings, right? You've obviously done well in life. Why are you doing this again, right? And how did you think about this decision?
And I'll layer something on, and maybe Andy, you should also give your view of the inside of the Netmagic journey. You made a ton of money. Like, why bother? Like, why not chill and retire? And then same question for you.
No, it's not the money alone that obviously motivates you. There were some gaps that we noticed at NTT. And maybe if I had the opportunity at Entity to address some of these gaps, because obviously Entity is such a large company and there are different divisions that were addressing gaps in a particular way. So we noticed, and we had built a successful cloud called Simply Cloud, which is still running and doing really well at Entity. And we noticed, we saw our users asking for AI workloads. We saw that early trend. And we were losing those clients to the hyperscalers.
Right.
And we felt that this is something that we should address. And even the other products that we are looking at, which will all kind of, all synergize, were gaps that we noticed when we were running our business. And, we wanted to address it. I think the agility that we could do as a startup, right, that was what was missing. That's why we decided to do it second time.
I think, Andy, just for context, how did you first join Sharad and then why did you second time join?
Me and Sharad go back all the way till 2005 or 6 around that time. And I first met Sharad at the other end of the ISP, enabling customers, I used to work for a company called CalTiger, which was the free ISP in the company. And this is, I'm talking 99, 2000, around that time. A lot of, obviously, being free and we had the dial-up modems and all that. So it was very, very popular. Not very profitable, obviously. But from there onwards, that was in Calcutta. I moved to Bombay, then I was working for a company called Pastenet, doing something similar, but not free. Dial-up, and then Sharad, we were customers to Sharad. So all of our setup used to be in the Netmagic data center. I think when I joined Netmagic in 2006, the allure of Netmagic was, and which Sharad also mentioned, is it was the only data center which was not a telecom service provider. It was carrier neutral. And that somehow, made the appeal much more to all the enterprises and to anybody who would want to cater to the growing Indian market at that point. And ISPs, and you remember, ISPs were like mushrooming everywhere during that time. And you really couldn't have the capability to, or the restriction of just staying with one provider. That, of course, is great from a business perspective. From a technical perspective, is very, very challenging. That's where we started. And then over a period of time, we built, I remember, from Goregaon, then to Saki Vihar, then to Vikhroli, as the networking became complicated. And that's something I'm very, very passionate with. And that's one of the reasons why we started this. And when AI started happening, we're looking at how can we leverage this new upcoming technology to make sure that people like me can sleep better. Essentially, that is what the idea was, right? And but the more we get into AI, we realize that, like every other new technology, we always see the end. There's a lot which happens behind the scenes, right? If you take an example of any AI deployment lifecycle, if you will, an LLM, which is the most popular, I think the most relatable kind of AI. It requires a lot of work, and I mean a lot of work, to even answer a simple question like, hey, what is your name? And that is completely hidden. I mean, for most people who are not technologists, you would rather want to, eat the cake rather than try to figure out which oven to buy and which one. That is what we also realized that when we started going down that path, that, hey, this needs to be solved. This is not as... there's more to it than what meets the eye. That is what we started out with, and hopefully we'd be able to deliver some value just like what we did to Netmagic.
Since you mentioned AI workloads a lot, right? I wanted to first start by talking a little bit about market trend lines and then sort of zoom in to a little bit about what NISA is up to. I think first question, when you think about India AI opportunity, right? Like India as a market, is it big enough? How do you think about that? And maybe now you also see like these, you have the big three clouds with a local presence back then. So what remains the same from your first journey? What changes according to you?
So I think, people have been, we were pleasantly surprised that there are, when you talk to the enterprise, and our target market is the enterprises, when we speak to the enterprise segment, we see that, you know, they've been, you know, a lot of these, especially in the banking and financial vertical, they've got teams of data scientists and machine learning engineers that have been working on various applications for a while. I mean, I think with the success of OpenAI, right, and you know, that's when everybody got came onto the bandwagon. But some of these enterprises have been working on AI solutions for a while, and so there is a fair amount of maturity. I think I recently read an article. I think it was a BCG article or something, which said that India has probably one of the richest sources of AI talent. Having said that, I've not seen too many Indian companies train a foundational large language model from scratch, right? We've not seen that happen yet. I mean, maybe there are a few. I think Kritrim is something we've heard of, and a few government initiatives as well. And if I draw a parallel from the cloud journey that we undertook at Netmagic, you know, Amazon, Google, Microsoft were all big companies, you know, offering cloud services. I think it was Amazon first, then Microsoft, and then Google came much later. And, you know, and it took maybe a couple of years before that trend moved to India. So we can see that there's enough enterprise, every single enterprise that we've spoken to is doing something or the other on AI, right? But we believe that the kind of widespread use of AI that we see in the West will probably take a little bit longer when people start training foundational models in India. And probably that'll take, in my opinion, about 18 to 24 months.
And, you know, back in the day, you were on a panel discussion which we found online. The title was Cloud, Hype or Real? Same question, but AI, hype or real? And if real, how real is it today, right? So, and I think multiple thoughts around that, but is it driven by boards and CIOs? Is it like, do these people have like teams formed around this? Is it thinking, proving and prototyping, production workloads? Like, where are we in that journey?
I think all of the above.
Yeah. All of the above.
And basically, I would say it's real. Whereas there is a lot of hype, but there have been successful implementations of AI. I mean, where people have used AI. You know, let's take the medical industry, right? You can diagnose a cataract with almost close to 100% accuracy just by looking at a photograph. So there are several use cases. You do something like fraud detection, or you do like churn prediction, you do recommendation engine. Yes, there's a lot of room for improvement in some of these, but it is, every day you see a new large language model becoming better than the previous one. So it's only a matter of time. So I think while there is hype, I think there's a lot of reality to it as well.
You know, but the way I look at it, not all AI is LLM. There's a lot of AI which is doing a lot of the stuff on a day-to-day basis, quality control being one on the manufacturing side, a truckload of AI being utilized there so that anything that you're making, I mean, from cars to cups to whatever, are done at a much faster rate, and AI is really helping out. Fraud detection and you know, these all kinds of the fintech companies where you can get a loan in 5 minutes with risk management and all of that taken care of. There's a lot of AI there. We are trying to see AI I don't know if you've noticed, after COVID, air traffic management is now the people have started using a lot of AI in air traffic management. Now we don't circle Bombay that many times, or even if we do, much less. So, you know, I mean, there is Gen AI and there is AI. And to answer your question, AI is very, very real, and it will only continue to get better as you know, more and more people use it, more and more use cases are being found, and, you know, we make sure that the implementations are safe and they are in that accuracy level of what we would want to achieve. As Sharad said, it'll take a little bit more time because, I mean, all said and done, we just started.
So Pranay, from my vantage point, just watching this as well as to your question on AI, you know, we went through the crypto bubble 2-3 years ago. You know, you often go through situations where there's hype and reality is here. In crypto, I think people are still looking for use cases. I think here, hype is vertical and use cases are also growing. And I know you have a point of view on apps that you should share. So I think it's real. The other thing just about NESA, which we are all privileged to be partners with, but also something that doesn't happen very often, is how quickly it's even in India, the demand we are seeing, right? It's not a push product. You know, there's a significant, and that is rare in businesses. It tells you, it's not only, and you're seeing in some of our companies, how quickly, so whether Ola is implementing or customer support in one card everywhere. I think what happens in markets is when there is a serious tectonic shift, they usually shoot over to the upside. You know, they'll overcorrect. It's like a pendulum. But because it's overcorrected, people always assume that it'll be a bust. I don't think this one is that. I think this is truly the iPhone type of a moment or a mobile computing moment, which is, or even a cloud computing moment.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Cloud computing compounded over a period of time. It wasn't as rapid. But I still remember even the first App Store apps for Google and Android, iPhone, they used to be shit. Right.
Hilarious.
So I think this one.
An iPhone launched without an App Store, by the way. There's no App Store at all.
So I don't think this one is. I think this one is real. Hype is ahead for sure. But that's also how you get disproportionate capital attracted to opportunities, and then you create more disruption. Right? Should talk about what your views are on apps and use cases.
Yeah.
What is your view? Is it hype or real?
No, real for sure. I think again, going back to iPhone as a parallel, I think the iPhone happened, right? App Store happened probably 1 or 2 years later. A lot of companies which were on web started porting their websites into mobile applications, right? So Facebook had a mobile app, Amazon had a mobile app. So it was still, you know, we talk about incumbents versus upstart, and it was the same thing then. People said, okay, all the companies who have a website will build a mobile app. They'll continue to win the market, right? I think good product and good design and good UX people usually need time to think creatively. Customer behavior also needs time to change. So I think the new experiences happened probably 2-3 years after the App Store, which was maybe like Uber in 2010, Instagram, or really Snapchat after that, where, you know, Uber launches the experience. It starts with GPS.
It's
right?
Native.
Now it is mobile only. You cannot replicate that on the web. Snapchat launches with a camera. Then you had Pokemon Go, which was like, you know, it combines GPS and your camera and VR. So you could see like people running around trying to capture Pokemons. That was 2015, right? So it took time for creativity to catch up and create net new use cases with the new capabilities that you had, right? So I feel like, at least when it comes to applications where I spend a lot of time, we are somewhere in the middle, right? That the capabilities are there, the creative use cases are maybe yet to show up, but they'll start showing up, and maybe in some pockets they are. But those applications can again be good consumers of models. They can come up with like sort of net new user experiences, new use cases, new jobs to be done.
But the real fun will be when it is, like you said, something that is so AI native.
Yeah.
That you couldn't do it otherwise.
You couldn't do it otherwise.
Yeah.
And I think the other one, just thought on
which
markets.
Which you probably haven't imagined yet.
And the thought on markets over there was, again, industrial automation was automating hands and legs. Right now, it's like if I had an army of 20-year-old interns, what could I make them do, right? But eventually, if you see any company P&L, maybe 10% is software, 60-70% is headcount. And if you take just 10% of that headcount and move it to software, right? So what are people doing today, which to some degree you can automate, then your software spend in every company is going up, headcount spend is going down. So just applications will actually capture a lot of value.
I think, I mean, to further to your point, yeah, one thing you missed out was Angry Birds. because that was, you know, the technology which was enabling that was multi-touch, right? And once people start getting, you know, you never know what the next thing would be. And from a pure hardware perspective and from the pure infrastructure which is required to run these things, these are very powerful. Even the smallest ones are very powerful devices. So, I mean, once you're right, I mean, once it goes out in the mainstream, we never know what bright sparks will be thinking outside in the world.
Coming back to NASA, right? And we talked about the market opportunities. So just zoom in again on NASA, like give us just for everyone to understand the company better, give us a brief about just the company and the mission.
Yeah, so the aim is to democratize AI. We, you know, like we have the standard problem statement that you have from enterprises. Look, our board decided, and that kind of segues to your earlier question as well, is that, look, our, you know, in the boardroom conversation, the CEO and the board member decided that we need to leverage AI to improve productivity, efficiency, to stay relevant in business. And so I've got a budget. The CIO comes and says, I've got a budget to do something with AI, but I don't know where to start, right? And that's a problem that, you know, I've heard this over and over again. Of course, there are different kinds of companies. There are mature companies, as also I mentioned, like some of the banking and financial sector, where they've got armies of people already doing this for the last 10 years. And our aim was, and when we tried to use it ourselves for some of our other applications, we found that, you know, there was, A, it was very expensive. B, there were lots of moving parts. How do we make this in a seamless manner so that, you know, it is not only affordable, but you can easily, seamlessly develop applications using Gen AI apps. And so we decided that we'll address this segment to make it affordable, to make it, and affordability we've done through multiple ways, right? We've done it through, fractionalizing GPUs. We've done it through becoming cloud agnostic and connecting to all the clouds so that data egress costs are reduced. We've done it through, using the right GPU or CPU. If it's inferencing, you don't necessarily need a high-end GPU.
You don't need an H100.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So we've used all our experience to kind of figure out what's the right way of doing it. And, by solving it for ourselves, we figured that we could solve it for others. And so the true mission is to democratize AI for enterprises, and so that they can get a true return on investment when they embark on the AI journey.
A lot of AI means a lot of data. Moving down, we even thought of that. How do we move data for enterprises? And they have like a lot of data, and they do not want, they're very, very touchy about how secure the data is. They do not want it over the wire. They do not want it unencrypted, and they want it fast. So how do I, and to train any kind of AI model, you need a lot of data. So we solve for that as well. Then when we look at cloud computing and a lot of these models, once trained, they need to be deployed around the world. Let's say if somebody is acquiring a customer in Singapore, for example, now with fintech, UPI and all of that starting happening in Singapore and Dubai and all of that, how do we deploy? So how can we move our workload seamlessly once it's trained or optimized or whatever to an edge, utilization kind of a thing? All those small things and these really add up. Right, when we look at cloud computing, if you look at the success of cloud computing today, it's primarily not because the technology, but it's more from an ecosystem perspective. Right, how quickly can you get to where you want to, and how can the platform help you? That's what we're trying to do.
So I know you addressed sort of the cost angle, but is there something, like again, when I think about this, I think there's multiple levels of the problem, but there is, usually there's this trade-off between cost, performance, quality, speed, right? That's sort of one type of complexity. The other type of complexity is building, deploying all of that. And like you said, a lot of moving pieces, right? So what are you doing on that front?
So we've done... To address the various requirements that are coming to us, we've done two, three different things that we've done. One is the model of deployment. We're doing both public cloud and private. So many enterprises don't want this to be on the public cloud. So we're happy to deploy the same technology that we deployed for us on the public cloud. We're happy to deploy on-prem. In addition to that, what we've done is we've found that enterprises, by talking to a lot of enterprises, they've got two kinds of users. One is the data scientists and machine learning engineers. So they've got teams, like I said, in some of the banking and financial verticals and other verticals as well. So for them, we are providing a platform that allows them to seamlessly do the entire MLOps journey, right from data ingestion to feature engineering to selecting a model, training a model, inferencing, and then continuously monitoring this, right? And there's another line of business users that we have, like, for example, a marketing department in a company or a customer service department in a company who don't necessarily want to, who don't have the people who are machine learning engineers or who can write machine learning code. So for them, we've got a platform that allows them to do without writing code, with a low-code, no-code platform where they can build Gen AI apps. So with this, we believe, so at the bottom layer, we have the hardware, which is the GPUs, CPUs, storage, etc. Then we have the orchestration engine, which will basically allow people to even do fractional GPUs, especially for the Indian market. Yeah. And then on top of that, we have these platforms that address both segment of users. So this way we make it seamless, we make it cost effective, and we make it very rapid to deploy.
Right. And we make it more approachable. Yeah. I mean, you can be a hardcore nerd and you can get into a system and do what you want, or you could be somebody who really wants to just, you know, eat the ice cream, not really worry about where the milk came from and all of that. Both, and in the middle as well. If you want to transition from this to that or somewhere in the middle, is something that we would enable in the platform.
And one of the things we want to do differently compared to some of the hyperscalers is also provide assistance or, you know, give services to the clients so that we can collaborate and, you know, build along with them. Yeah. Right. So this will be done directly by our team as well as some of the partners that we've identified, so that, you know, people don't struggle in their journey and they don't get overwhelmed trying to adopt AI.
I think the sovereign cloud trend is also interesting, right? At some stage, even vis-a-vis these hyperscalers. So we'll see where that goes. So I don't think people realize how data is precious to some of these clients, right? So on-prem, co-location, some of this the hyperscalers don't even offer, right?
Yeah, they don't. They don't. That's where we are different. Yeah. And yeah. I think eventually we will start looking at a vertical focus as well.
Yes.
Right now we're starting. We're still trying to figure out the market, and then once we see that there's this set of users in a particular vertical, then we'll try and make more verticalized focus on so that we can address their needs more directly.
When you look at the talent pool out there, you mentioned earlier that there's a great talent pool. I think apps will take 2, 3, 4 years for those, you know, breakout things to come out and stuff. But within the enterprises, you were mentioning the other day, I think it would be interesting to share it, that people have had pretty deep talent pools, right? They were kind of waiting for some of these things to show up.
Absolutely. There are. I mean, people have invested. I mean, I've been surprised. I've seen both ends of the spectrum. There are some people who know that they need to do something with AI, but don't know how to do it. But then there are other people who are waiting for the infrastructure to be made available so that they could actually leverage what they've done. They've got teams, went to a banking client that more than a team of more than 100 data science and machine learning engineers. And so the talent exists for sure.
And the CEO on down, the budgets are there.
Like budgets are there. Budgets. It's a boardroom conversation, so yeah. Budgets are there.
Maybe last question about the company, right? Obviously, it is your second innings. So, when you think about Netmagic versus Nisa, curious to know, and it's a question from all the founders out there as well. So, what are two things you are repeating and retaining from the last journey, and what are two things you're going to do different?
So, I think two things that we'll retain are I'm talking about
retaining.
No.
Retaining Andy is one of the two things.
Two things. I'm going to address it. The earlier journey was Netmagic, and then it culminated to NTT. Yeah. So I'll address it kind of in a hybrid way. So the two things that we'll retain for sure is the people culture, the way we. Everybody's equal, there's a very informal atmosphere, etc. And the values that we had will remain. And the second is the customer centricity, right? So that's not going to change. The thing that we will I don't think I'll change anything from the early days of Netmagic, because obviously if this turns out to be as good as that, hopefully this will be better. But even if it turns out to be as good as that, I think it'll be a reasonable outcome. But what I will change is, we want agility. So I think towards the later half, as the company grew into a, really, really large company, I think we became slower. And, there was a lot of flab in terms of number of people. So here we want to give people, our staff, more opportunity to grow. And so we typically, even the department heads are hands-on people, right? So agility is something we want to get back and, also make it right-sized.
Absolutely. I mean, building on top of it, I think one of the things that we would also want to... When we were Netmagic, we were known to be good at what we do. And that's what made us survive. There were much bigger companies who... And we went toe-to-toe with them. That is something that I would really want to retain as part of from sheer, a force of nature, if you will. I mean, that only goes when you have a rock solid foundation to stand on, and then you give other people the confidence to push on it, and knowing that it will not fail. You go and you win. That's something that Netmagic had. That's something else that we would also, I'm sure we will have it in NASA as well. But that said, from a tech perspective, and I understand it, being a tech guy myself, that it becomes a little bit of, fatiguing, because tech changes always all the time, and how much studying can you do, right? But so that is something that I'm hoping that I will be able to change, because as NTT grew, you get a lot of people who are, unable or unwilling to keep up to the tech. And here, there is something that we cannot afford.
Yeah, willingness to change.
Yeah, you need to evolve. It's a certain kind of people. I'm sure, these are the fast runners, but also the ugly kickers of the horses, they'll be difficult. I'm sure there'll be some challenges down the road, and we'll see them together, I guess. But that's it. That's something that we want to do.
So Pranay, Vineet is here, and this is Matrix Moment, so I have to plug our other episodes. So we talk about experienced founders. There's an experienced founders episode. If you go through, coming back to your question on what are they repeating, working in domain, compounding on capability, not taking market risk, which we have realized after we started, I think, because there's a bigger market out there than we thought. Margins are excellent, so profit pools are great. Followership, the entire team is, so it's like checking a lot of boxes, which makes it even more exciting.
Awesome. So we'll end with a quick fire round. I'll ask a question, you give me your reactions. I'm not asking questions to anyone, so you can pick up whatever you want. Right? What surprised you about this Gen AI wave?
How fast it got global adoption. I don't know, I don't remember the statistics, but millions of people in a very short time.
100 million in like 2 months or something.
What worries you about the Gen AI wave? Flip side to the same question.
The post-truth thing, I mean, how do you know what is a human and what is AI, what has been machine generated? I think that's the underlying why we don't want to get there, but all of us are thinking about it, definitely.
I think worries also, in terms of misuse, so like deep fakes, or also, the technology needs to evolve. There's a lot of hallucination happening on the LLMs. That hopefully will get better over time.
So our audience knows these are not four bots or avatars having a conversation, because five fingers. I still struggles with
that. No, that was already fixed, I think.
I worry about, from an investor standpoint, I worry about glut of capacity.
Sam Altman said it's hopeless for teams in India to compete with OpenAI on foundation models. Agree or disagree?
Disagree.
Okay. Because?
With a star mark.
I think I would never say never.
Yeah,
I mean, I think anything is possible. I think people in India have achieved, the unthinkable. It may take time, but I would never say never. And I think you've got an example in Kruthrim.
Kruthrim, The what they're doing in Kruthrim is frankly amazing. And secondly, I mean, we also have to understand that, whenever somebody who's a leader and OpenAI is a leader, they would, by just observing them, we would be able to figure out something that we could do better. And they just couldn't. Like, and India has done this multiple times.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, so like we went from, we never had analog cell phones. We were always digital. And we never had to worry about, like right now we have 2G, and all of us travel. Like half of the world is still 3G, we are 5G. It allows us to, identify those things that we could like leapfrog. And this is probably, I would say, the second mover advantage, if you will, for a lack of a better word. But it gives us an opportunity to observe.
So I feel very deeply about this. I think, Pranay, if you look at the moats in this business underlying Sam Altman's view, he could argue it would be capital. It can definitely not be people. We have the best people. Probably a lot of OpenAI is Indians, right? So. Oh, yeah. I think there is no longer some of the moats that exist, for example, versus China and manufacturing or the US. They just don't exist here. So I think people will be surprised. I am looking forward to the next Snapchat, Pokemon, whatever examples you guys took, actually coming from India.
Coming from India. Awesome.
And Pranay will say, that's my thesis.
Yeah. And it has happened, actually. I mean, from a pure development perspective, Postman came from India.
Yeah.
And it happened in Bangalore.
I know his comment is more about foundation models, but I think the talent is
there. The talent is there, definitely.
Capital is there.
Capital is there, yeah.
And by the way, I believe that there will be, you are seeing the barriers being erected in EVs. You're seeing all of that. I think that's coming to AI. If there is anything, I also get scared about, you know, planes being run by AI and all that. If there's something that countries are going to be extremely nationalistic about, and rightfully so, it's going to be all of this. So you need local players just for that.
So data and AI has become a geopolitical battle.
Yeah,
so.
But it will be, and it will continue to be.
As a founder, what's the secret to a happy marriage?
Work-life balance.
I have to answer. Yeah, work-life balance.
and with their wife will say whatever.
But in
but
the early
went,
days, is
he
there
went for his wife's appointment and then came here.
Yeah. But is there work-life balance in the early days?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, one thing different from Netmagic to here, I don't think there was quite as much work-life balance there. Now, thanks to people like Andy, there's more work-life balance.
And I think, Pranay, just again in the context of the some of the things we have said on the podcast about Org 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, experienced founders. You know, the tendency in the first founder journey tends to be hustle, hustle, hustle all the time. It's not always productive. Here it is think, then hustle.
Absolutely.
So you can get better results while maintaining some balance.
I think the difference is focus. Yeah. You know, what are the one or two things that really matter?
I think
and you
also
go after
what happened
those.
Is with Netmagic, we've got close to 3,000 relationships.
Yeah.
Right. And
so that makes life easier.
That makes life much easier.
Yeah.
Right.
And there are a lot of, you know, potholes that we stepped in at Netmagic, which we will definitely know. Don't do that. You know, which will also make it easier. Yeah.
If you had to call a younger Sharad the day before he was starting Netmagic, what advice would you have for him?
I would tell him to, you know, that things will, you know, go for it. Things will work out. Because when I started Netmagic, honestly, I didn't know where we were headed. And maintain work-life balance.
And last one, but hiring tech talent in Bombay, easy or difficult?
It's available, but it's difficult. A lot of people lie on their resumes. And so it takes a long screening process. The talent is there, so don't get me wrong. Well, it's good talent, but it takes time.
I'm going to make a big plug for Bombay, Mumbai rather, Pranay, because you know things are changing. I think if you look at when we started, we had only office in this building. Everything was Mumbai. All the VC started here or between here and Delhi. Bangalore didn't really used to exist because it was very back-end tech. What happened was all the engineering talent realized that the quality of life in Mumbai was terrible. They had to live in very small apartments, very far away, commute very long.
All of that.
It's all changing. And in this fund, like you know, in the last 2-3 years, so you have decided to actually visit Mumbai. That tells me in itself. This is a core tech company. You have interviewed two other people earlier in the day, which are all deep tech. So it's not fintech, well-known. Consumer brands, yes. Media tech, yes. It's deep tech also. And I think in the next 2 years, you know, one of the team guys who are pushing Mumbai as an entrepreneurial center, they were telling me that their engineers, NPS, in the last year of the metro rail opening has gone up significantly. Right? Because the 1 hour, 30-minute commute is becoming. So I think this city is converging very fast. It is the best city in India, everybody knows. So I think what you're going to see is a big change.
I think the work ethic of engineers here is much better.
Overall work ethic in
Mumbai
is the best.
Overall work ethic is the best. And work ethic, you know, I think in Bangalore, there's a lot of, because there's so many more avenues for them to
Retention is
a big problem in Bangalore, whereas it's much better in Bombay.
No, I think just on top of that, if there's one word I'll use which is different, it is optimism, right? It's like, you know, the Indian dream of, you know, go to a big city, make it. So it's like everyone's pushing each other forward and you feel the optimism.
The Mumbai dream, yeah.
Awesome. With that, we'll wrap. Once again, Sharad, Andy, pleasure to host you. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Pranay.
Very privileged to partner with you guys and very excited about the way forward.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pranay.